Fasten your seatbelts, it's the new year, and we've got instructions for Flight 2019, as well as questions about threats to orthodoxicity. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the physical, emotional, psychological, and everything in between. This is episode number 553 of The Next Step. We invite you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. Here, Father Voskin provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchise members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Already into the new year for over a week, we are on day 10 of the new year, and, well, can I do this? Can I really do this? Can I play for you?
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen.
Have you known one of those white Christmases? First of all, aren't you ready to say, enough of Christmas? Aren't we finished with it? Okay, you had your January 6th. Well, guess what? The Russians are coming. And the Russians are on the Julian calendar. They celebrated their Christmas, our December 25th. They celebrated on January 7th. And they're celebrating 12 days later the baptism of our Lord on January 19th. Now, if this isn't confusing enough because it's Julian calendar, guess what? The Armenian Church in Jerusalem celebrates on the Julian calendar as well. So January 19th, traditionally known as the Theophany, where Armenians also celebrate the Nativity and Theophany, is celebrated on January 29th there in Jerusalem, okay? So it's in order. It's in order. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Now let me ask you, have you dreamt of that kind of Christmas where the treetops glisten? Do you have that vision of Christmas? White Christmas? I guess it depends on where you're at, right? Here, certainly here in Southern California, our Christmases are never white. We have to artificially color them white. And we have things that we actually put on Christmas trees called flock. It simulates snow. We don't have snow on Christmas. December 25th, January 6th, January 19th, no snow at all. How about you? Do you think of white Christmas? Have you had a white Christmas? If you're in a place like where I live, never, never have I had a white Christmas. Well, this year I did. Because guess what? Last Sunday, January 6th, which is non-Christmas for most of the world, happens to be Christmas for me. My son Christopher and I were in Utah, Salt Lake City. And our plane touched down. We were going to celebrate the Divine Liturgy with the Armenian community over there. Plane touched down, and I would say within 5 minutes, snowflakes started coming down. Yes, I am dreaming of a white Christmas. It came true. White Christmas in January, on January 6th. And fortunately, it only lasted to the length of our service. By 3 o'clock, well, I guess we touched down at 10 o'clock. It had snowed until about 3:30. And because we had to rent church over there, we used the Greek Orthodox Church, the Saint Elias, I believe, is the name of the saint that the Greek Orthodox Church is named after. Because we rent that church, we celebrate later after theirs. So actually, it happened to be January 6th. So for the Greeks, they celebrate the baptism of Christ. We got to church in time to witness the water blessing there. And then with our divine liturgy, we celebrated the divine liturgy and also celebrated the blessing of water. And in our case, it was the nativity and the baptism that we were celebrating. And it was done under a white Christmas theme. It was beautiful. I have to tell you, it was beautiful. And after our beautiful white Christmas, we got on the plane and headed back to sunny California. And we were on a plane that was just, it was not a pleasant ride. Let me tell you that way, okay? We had a lot of turbulence. And on top of it, we had, you know, I don't know where it is. They somehow find me. We had the girl who was right behind us, young girl whose parents could care less about her coughing patterns and coughing habits. So she was just openly coughing, and we happened to be there. It was just nerve-wracking from Salt Lake City back to Los Angeles. But it was a new year and a new season, a new Christmas that we were celebrating. So very, very positive in all senses, of the word. And of course, a beautiful time with my son, Christopher. He was the deacon at the service. We celebrated together. It was beautiful, very, very heartwarming. And even the plane kind of did away with some of the negativity of the plane, just to reflect on a beautiful, beautiful Christmas morning. White Christmas. And then Monday, had a good night's sleep after this day that January 6th, we started 4 in the morning and we went all the way till 11. It was a long day, a lot of traveled 2,000 miles back and forth. So we were tired, okay? So Monday morning, to say the least, Monday morning we got up, checked my emails, and we have such a powerful, powerful prayer group. And I know some of you that listen to this podcast are on that prayer group, and you know how powerful it gets. Some of the prayers and some of the thoughts that are given in that prayer group, they move mountains. They literally move mountains. But Monday morning, January 7th, I came across this small writing that one of the members offered. And I guess the timing of it, right after we had gotten off the plane, and then to hear this message in the metaphor of that of the plane ride, that all too familiar speech that is given at the beginning of each plane ride, and adapted for our prayer group. So I wanted to share this with you. It's sort of the plane ride at the beginning of the year. It's the first plane ride of the year, okay? And let me share this with you. Hello, welcome to Flight 2019. We are prepared to take off into the new year. Please make sure your attitude and blessings are secured and locked in an upright position. All self-destructive devices should be turned off at this time. All negativity, hurt, and discouragement should be put away. Should we lose attitude under pressure, during the flight, reach up and pull down a prayer. Prayers will automatically be activated by faith. Once your faith is activated, you can assist other passengers. There will be no baggage allowed on this flight. The captain, God, has cleared us for takeoff. Destination, greatness. Isn't that beautiful? I just love this one. And, you know, before we take off with this, I want to ask you, what did you think about it? Think about it for a moment, okay? Do you want me? Okay, yeah, okay, sure. It's looking at me. I'll read it again, yes, because it is really beautiful. Hello and welcome to Flight 2019. We are prepared to take off into the new year. Please make sure your attitude and blessings are secured and locked in an upright position. All self-destructive devices should be turned off at this time. All negativity, hurt, and discouragement should be put away. Should we lose attitude under pressure, during the flight, reach up and pull down a prayer. prayers will be automatically activated by faith. Once your prayer is activated, you can assist other passengers. There will be no baggage allowed on this flight. The captain, God, has cleared us for takeoff. Destination, greatness. I want you to think about that, okay? What comes to your mind when you think of something like this? When you hear something like this? And there's a reason why I'm asking you this. Because a lot of times, these kind of inspirational messages get shoved to one side, particularly among mainline, or let's say the Orthodox community. I'll talk from our behalf, okay, by the Orthodox community. And it's not because it's inspirational, but it's primarily because it is created in the contemporary. And this is really, really one of those biases that people don't admit, but is very, very real. Somehow, if it's old, it becomes Orthodox. Or maybe the other way around. If it's Orthodox, it must be old. It must have date. It must have precedence. It must have history. And if you've been listening to this podcast, you know where we come from. I mean, Armodoxy, you're looking at the most ancient fabric of Christianity on earth. And when you think about it, and when you analyze it in the terms of Armodoxy, in terms of today, it's about living today. And the messages come, yes, from the past, but also from today. Now, I don't know if you're on the same page as I am right now, but I read this, I loved it, I thought it was beautiful, and I shared it with a few people by forwarding it. And one of the responses I got was, well, that's a nice Protestant idea. This is not about Protestant. This is not about Protestant. It's not about Catholic. It's not about Orthodox. It's not even about Christian. It's about understanding that we live in the today and now. Do you think that if Jesus was here today, as opposed to 2,000 years ago, as opposed to roaming the earth 2,000 years ago, if he was here today roaming the earth, do you think that in his metaphors he would be talking about fig trees? He would use the metaphor of grains of wheat? He might have, but I think alongside of that he would have also used metaphors that included air flight, air travel. He would have used metaphors that would have included elevators that go up. And he who gets in first and travels all the way to the top is the last to get out. I think he would have used metaphors that included space technology, just technology in general, computers. I have a keyboard prayer that has been sitting next to my computer keyboard. I hate to admit this, since the 1980s, actually 1985. When Susan got me my first Apple II computer, it was one of the first things when on one of those coupler modems I found. And it is something I've printed up, I've had laminated, and it sits right next to my keyboard. Can I share it with you? Are you interested? It's called the Keyboard Prayer. Our program, who art in memory. Hallowed be thy name. Thy operating system come, thy commands be done at the printer as it is on the screen. Give us this day our daily data, and forgive us our I/O errors, as we forgive those whose logic circuits are faulty. Lead us not into frustration, and deliver us from power surges, for thine is the algorithm, the application, and the solution, looping forever and ever. Return. Sacrilege? I don't know. Maybe it is to some people. It wasn't to me. Because these words meant something. The words here meant something at the time. Some of them still do, but our program, Who Art in Memory, that's where we used to have these tiny little bits of memory. Believe it or not, my first computer had 1 kilobyte. Not megabyte, 1 kilobyte of memory. And it took a while before I could upgrade it because it was so costly. Upgrade it to 16 kilobytes of memory. And that's where your program resided. The first Macintosh computer that we had, it had the operating system as well as two programs called MacWrite, which was a word processor, and MacPaint, all on a 400 kilobyte disk. Yes, the operating system too. You'd stick this disk in and it would make the computer work. Operating system commands, thy command be done. Yeah, you could think about commands, but it's a very clever way of using that word, because we had command lines and everything ran according to command lines. Forgive us our I/O errors. Of course, you know what that's all about. Logic circuitries, power surges that brought on frustrations. Oh, what a time it was. And so somebody was clever enough to create this keyboard prayer. And for over 30 years, I've kept it right next to my keyboard, because I've swapped out so many different keyboards and computers through the years, but this stays with me. Is it sacrilege? Is it orthodox? Is it some Protestant trying to infiltrate the ranks? Of course not. Of course not. I say this because there's so many people, and I think you know what I'm talking about, who shy away from being relevant for fear that we will lose our orthodoxicity. They go to all kinds of pains to tie us in with people like Saint Cyril of Alexandria or Saint Basil the Great. And you know, at the end of the day, who is Saint Cyril or Saint John Chrysostom or Saint Basil the Great? Who were they talking about? What were they talking about? They were talking about Christ, Jesus Christ in the center. And so it's like people who get up and say, I'm Methodist, I'm Unitarian, I'm Lutheran, I'm Orthodox, I'm Catholic. Hey, at the end of the day, you follow a tradition that is based on Jesus Christ. I don't know, I threw a Unitarian in. I'm not sure about that one, but you get the idea. You know, we put labels on it, and these labels keep us away or distance us from who is at the center. And I mention this because I'm very worried about this. I'm listening to a podcast right now by a gentleman who does it about St. Thomas Aquinas. And actually, I'll put a link on today's show notes. I'm very impressed by the podcast. And I want you to listen to a few of them. Okay, it's from a Catholic. I don't get scared by that. I'm excited that he finds excitement in his faith. I'm excited that through the Catholic Church, he is working it out and he's sharing with us about Thomas Aquinas and the philosophy. Now, that philosophy, religion, that means of expression doesn't click with me, okay? But it doesn't need to. It doesn't need to. I am still Orthodox, and it doesn't threaten my orthodoxicity. You know, I read Protestant theologians, some of the big ones. I enjoy. Recently, while I was at St. Nersis, there was a book bin there, and they had books that were duplicates, and they were giving away. And I found Systematic Theology by Paul Tillich. This was a book back in the 60s, 70s, I think. It was just remarkable. It was groundbreaking. Systematic Theology. I picked up this book at St. Nersis by a Protestant theologian. And I've read it, and I haven't read the whole thing, but let me say I've skimmed through it, but I've looked at it and read different portions of it. Fascinating, fascinating. The idea that he is able to process theology in such a manner. Now, this doesn't threaten me. It's fine. I'd love to get into it. And are there Orthodox moments? Definitely. These were known as, there was the Neo-Orthodox movement back in the 1940s, 1950s, the Bonhoefferlikes, the Karl Barth. You know, they were playing around with Orthodox themes, and Orthodoxy has been renewed, has gone over, has been transitioned. How many different times? There were so many different ways of approaching these theologians that I read do not threaten my orthodoxicity. Just as a prayer that might be found in some kind of Protestant hymnal or Protestant book or on some website shouldn't threaten us, actually, if it could add value, in which case, in the case of this prayer that I shared with you about the metaphor with the flight, and you know, we've all heard all that stuff. We've heard all of that before. You know, fasten your seatbelts. In the event of loss of cabin pressure, the mask is going to come down, and you all know, right, that you have to put your mask on first before you could put it on somebody else. Well, wasn't that beautiful? That one line was great. Pull down your own prayer first before you start aiding someone else with their prayer. Yeah, it works. It's okay. And we need to start being open to these things, because so many times, we shun what can really be talking to us because they are not labeled by somebody, because they are not old, because the dust hasn't collected, because the book isn't dog-eared. No, you are orthodox. You know what you believe. And when you do, things come in and they add, they accent, they become one more layer that you have brought to the discussion. Because, like it or not, orthodoxy has arrived to the 21st century by no other means than by you. You are here. We are here. And we represent that Orthodox communion. Something to think about, okay? And that's where I wanted to start off today. We're going to do the song of the day. I pick out a song every week. This week, we're going to Khachadur Khachaduryan. This is a brand new album that he's put together. It's called Armenian Lullabies. Actually, it's called Oror Unani. Armenian Lullabies that he himself describes on his webpage. The first Armenian lullaby album combining traditional pieces with a modern touch performed in a male voice. So let's listen to one of the pieces. This is called Tırnotsi. Enjoy, but don't fall asleep. I'll be back.
Ustits kukas hushik hushik votamete elvarti pushik shat khorodes bagtanushik shat khorodes bagtanushik hara im tarlan aghchigas hara im jeyran aghchigas hara im anush aghchigas hara im bubush aghchigas tul 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 chan tul 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 Kas veren vana darte de gelem divana bakik midur sirts hovana bakik midur sirts hovana hara im tarlan aghchigas hara im jeyran aghchigas hara im anush aghchigas hara im bubush aghchigas tul 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 chan tul 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 Hushik, hushik, shat khorodes bagdanushik Kerelem zotzit michina, meknelen sertit michina Hara im tarlan aghchigas, hara im jeyran aghchigas Hara im anush aghchigas, hara im bubush aghchigas.
Tırnotsi is the name of this lullaby. It comes off of a collection of Armenian lullabies an album called Oror Unani by Khachadur Khachadurian. And there will be a link on today's show notes. Actually, I put a couple links on because he did his funding through Kickstart. So we'll put down a couple different links. Do check it out. I was listening to this, to the entire album, and no, I didn't fall asleep. Very soothing. I got to tell you that. Probably better than the chamomile that you drink at night. Maybe to just put one of these songs on or a few of these on. But it's interesting as I was listening because his words that he talks about, modern touch. What is that modern touch? Well, in many sense, you know, you hear the duduk in there, you hear the rhythms that he has. But I think the modern touch also incorporates who we are as modernists. Actually falls right into the discussion we were having a few minutes ago, that not everything needs to be old to be legitimate, especially in Orthodoxy. Same way, an Oror, it becomes modern because we are modern. Just the modern man today is more of a parent. Let's say it this way. The modern man today is more of a hands-on parent than he was, say, two or three generations ago, where it was unheard of that a man would change the diapers of his children. Today, it's just part and accepted part of the routine of fatherhood, that you share the responsibilities with mother. And in this respect, I think there is an understanding of this modern touch to parenting, and certainly these lullabies, which are all pretty old, you know. If you were lucky enough, a parent, maybe a grandparent, sang these lullabies. Oror Unani. It's a nice word, nani. You hear it every so often. Yeah, it's one of those words like dodo. You know, it's kind of fun. Nani. Let's go to nani. And let's go to sleep, right? Let's go to sleep. Let's go to nani. So it's done very nicely, and I invite you to take a look. Give it a chance and listen to it. Khachadur Khachadurian, Armenia Lullabies, Oror Unani. I will have a link on today's show notes. Do check it out. Do you ever play ketchup? No, not the stuff that goes on your hamburgers. Catching up. Do you ever play ketchup? Like, do you try to catch up with your life? Catch up with others. And it's kind of an interesting phenomenon. I've been trying to catch up with my life lately in particular. And it's an interesting phenomenon because the more you try to catch up, the farther you get from where you are today. It's a phenomena that's easily explained because, well, the amount of time that you're spending catching up is taken away from your reality today. In other words, if I'm going to spend, an hour to catch up, it means I'm set back an hour from where I am right now. So it's almost like infinity, you know, you can always add one. So you never get, that's what infinity is, right? You get to 100 million, trillion, sextillion, whatever it may be, that number. But it's not the end because you can always add one. And when you add one to it, it's just even longer. Same way, you try to catch up, but you're just adding to it. You're adding to the catch-up process more to catch up. I'm particularly feeling this lately because, as I shared with you over the last month, I felt very, very close to my podcast audience. I can't thank you enough for this opportunity that you give and for your interaction with me. But, you know, since my mother passed away last November, it's been difficult because not only the grieving process, but I haven't had that chance to successfully grieve. That in itself is a phenomena that should be talked about. Successful grieving. It's a necessary component to the life process that you grieve someone who has passed away. No matter how you do that grieving, It could, sometimes that grieving could be expressed in a celebration. I'm not saying grieving means you sit down, because most often when you hear that word grieve or grieving, you think of it in a negative content, right? You think of it negatively. What is grieving? A person grieves. He goes into a room by himself. Depression, crying, wailing. But that's not necessarily true, right? There are different ways of grieving. Celebration, celebrating life, is also a way of grieving. And really what I'm talking about is giving ourselves enough time to grieve, and you try to play catch up, but you can't. In case in point, in my situation, you know, my mother passed away on a Wednesday. Friday night, I had to teach a Bible study and go into it was actually a brand new session with young people. So people who had never met me before, and obviously I'm not going to go there and say, oh, by the way, my mother just passed away. It's not the topic that you have, especially with young people. So that Friday night we did that. And then Sunday morning we had our annual walk, 5K walk for Vahakan Sethi. And of course, another time where you just can't go in there and say, hey, you know what? I'm walking, but look at me. I'm grieving. No. You just do it. And finally, I guess the night of my mother's wake, we had an ecumenical service that I had to be the MC for. And you go through all of these things because, well, you have obligations. You can't just step out. But they take you away from a process. They take you away from a contemplation, which is just as important as everything else. I'm saying this because we're getting, you know, we go through different cycles during the church year, and we have a couple good cycles. One of them is Lenten season, and one of them is the Advent season, giving us time to have introspection, looking at our lives to contemplate the meaning and purpose of what we are here for and what we do. And when you don't give yourself time to do those, what happens is you get into this catch-up process, and the catch-up process never works. So what you think about that, okay, I'm going to leave for tomorrow, and I will catch up, and I will do more, it just never really works out. And the only person you're cheating on that time is yourself, because you do need this process. You do need to grieve. Let's say use that as the metaphor right now. The grieving, not that you need to feel sorry for yourself. Negativity excludes any kind of negative reaction. But grieving in this case means setting aside some time to figure out what's going on, to reflect. To reflect and contemplate about a life. In the true sense of grieving, what is that all about? You have somebody in your life who you've now lost and has now been distanced. So you need to contemplate and think about, what did that life mean? Why am I feeling an emptiness in our lives? I shared with you that my mother had reached a nice age of 85 when she passed away. This past week I had to officiate at a funeral of a young man who died at the age of 29. 29. Time when life should be starting. And it gives you a chance as a person, as a human being, to contemplate the purpose and meaning of life. This week was the 40th day of my mother's passing. And as a family, we went to her grave. And we were standing there, and one of my nephews, standing across from me, made a comment about the dates on the grave. And it occurred to me that, you know, there's this beautiful lesson that we could learn from gravestones, tombstones, as they were called. Now they're more like gravestones, right? Because it's more than just a tomb. There's a grave there. And the lesson is that tiny, tiny little line that every grave, when he said this, when he made a comment about the years and how many years my dad had lived, how my mom had lived. And in all of the years, there's that tiny little dash. There is a number that is placed there, 1933, a date that that person was born. And then another date, 2018, when that person passed away. And separating those 2 years is this tiny little line called a dash. And you realize that that's what it is. That's where the life is. It's not about the birth. It's not about the death. But what matters is that tiny little line. And yes, sometimes that tiny little line extends 85 years. Sometimes 110 years, right? Sometimes, tragically, 29 years. Sometimes even less. As a priest, I've tragically been in people's lives where that line has been delineated by a couple days, a few hours, sometimes minutes. And what's important is what that line means. That line is the definition. That dash is the definition of your life. What have you done between your birth and your death? And how is it filled up? How do you fill it up? And in that sense, there's nobody else who can answer that. There's nobody else for whom that question should matter. Yes, it matters to a lot of people, but for whom it should matter. It should matter only to you. How do you fill up those years? How do you fill up those days? What are you doing with the life that God has given you? And you've got those two dates, the birth and the death dates, that you personally have absolutely no control over. You had absolutely no control over when you came into this world, and sometimes perhaps you do have a control over when you leave this world, but for the most part, it's beyond your control. But what is in your control is that dash, that amount of time that's there in that life. It's probably a good conversation to have at the beginning of the year when we have our resolutions. And as a young person, I think all of us have done this. We've set aside some resolutions. This is what I'm going to do. And then slowly, as you grow older, you realize that there's no magic about January 1st. It's just a convenient date to set for resolutions. It's just convenient because you can measure it. Okay, last year, on January 1st, I was at this point in my life. I was at this weight. I was at this height. I was at this financial status. And now this year, January 1st, we've gone around the sun once. 365 days have passed, and I am now at this point in my life. I'm at this weight in my life. I'm at this financial status in my life. And you start doing the cross comparisons. Add or subtract, and you have a number with which you can play with. I've gained this much weight. I've lost this much weight. I've gained this much finances. I've lost this much finances. I've had beautiful relationships that have been lost. I didn't have a relationship and I have gained those relationships. I mean, there are so many different ways by which you can measure what that dash is in your life. And January 1st becomes this traditionally good day to measure it by. But as I was saying, you get older and you realize that you can do that from any day. There's no magic to January 1st. Today's January 10th. You could start today and measured from January 10th to January 9th next year. What's important is in that measuring that you understand that it's all in your hand. It's all in your hand. Even health issues, it's still in your hand. And yes, there are some tragic health issues that we hear about, that we come across, that plague our families, ourselves. Some of these health issues you wouldn't wish upon your enemy, whether it's these horrible forms of cancer or these horrible infections that people get. The drug addiction, the drug epidemic that we see among people that we know, and how it robs young people of their lives. Yes, these things, you could say, are from outside sources. But how you react, what you do while you're inside of that that environment is really up to you. And it's the only thing that you can control or that you do have control over. And you can say, well, why is that control issue such an important thing? It's important for the sake of dignity, for who you are, the person that you are, that you understand that you do have that power. It is in your hands. When you pray, to put away those negativities and pray positively. And if you think about it, just a rephrasing of what Jesus said, right? When you pray, believe that it has already been given to you. When you pray, believe that God has given it to you and it will be done for you. What does that mean? Well, you should think about what does that mean. It's not just regular words. It's the words coming to us from Jesus Christ. It must mean something more than some magical incantation. It must mean more than positive reinforcement to your thoughts, positive attitude. No, these are the words of Jesus Christ. They do not lie. They are always true. And they come to us, telling us that that dash in your life can be controlled by you in the way you approach that dash, that life. Specifically, I want you to take a look at Mark chapter 11 today. I use this because in the Armenian church, there is a healing service. Pajushkutyan Avedaraner. These are called healing gospels. This is one of them that is read. And in it, it's an interesting story because of when it takes place. It takes place as Jesus has entered into Jerusalem on that Palm Sunday. And the evangelist St. Mark places this statement right after Jesus' triumphant entry into the holy city. And it says, and they came to Jerusalem, and he entered the temple and began to drive out those who sold and those who brought in the temple, and he overturned the tables. So Mark remembers also, like all the synoptics remember, that there was the cleansing of the temple. But here's the interesting thing. As they passed by in the morning, they saw the fig tree withered away at its roots. This was a fig tree that Jesus had cursed. Very unusual story. Very unusual, because you have Jesus up against a natural object, nature itself, and Jesus curses this fig tree. And Peter remembered and said to him, Master, look, the fig tree which you cursed has withered. And Jesus answered them, have faith in God. Truly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, be taken up and cast into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says will come to pass, it will be done for him. Therefore I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you received it, and you will. And whenever you stand praying, forgive if you have anything against anyone, so that your Father also who is in heaven may forgive you your trespasses. Interesting, right? So we see this withered fig tree. Peter says, Lord, look, there's the fig tree you cursed. Now, what do you expect Jesus? What do you expect Jesus to say? Well, yeah, you know, I cursed it because it wasn't bearing fruit. You know, or maybe he could have used it as a lesson and said, that's what's going to happen to you if you don't bear fruit. That's what's going to happen to you if you cross me. That's going to happen to you if I curse you. You will wither like that fig tree. But instead, Jesus just turns it around. And what does he say? The first statement out of his mouth. And I want you to think about this, because this is St. Mark reflecting on it. St. Mark is writing this. He could have added those extra things that I just talked about if he wanted to change the story. But no, he's recording the story as it happens, and he's telling you. This is his answer to Peter. Master, look, the fig tree which you cursed has withered. Instead of answering that and giving the obvious, what we might expect, he turns around and he says, have faith in God. Let me repeat that, okay? I'm repeating it because it's important. I don't want you to just let it go in one ear and out the other ear. It's not that kind of statement. It's not meant to be taken lightly. Look, Master, the fig tree, it's all withered. Jesus, have faith in God. Truly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, be taken up and cast into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says will come to pass, it will be done for him. There you go. Believe without doubt. Believe, pray, understand that you are a creation of God, that your orthodoxy is defined by you, and you are here right now. It's happening right now. And now he qualifies everything that he said by giving us an instruction for the dash. Okay? Therefore, I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you receive it, and you will. And whenever you stand praying, forgive if you have anything against anyone, so that your Father also, who is in heaven, may forgive you your trespasses. There it is, the instruction for the dash. You want these beautiful things. You want to move the mountains. You want those cancers, infections, and disgust and filth to be out of your life. Do it. How? Forgive. Who can forgive your enemy but you? You alone. You are the only one who could forgive somebody who has done something wrong to you. So you get it? Whose hands is it in? Who else can do that for you? Who else can take care of that dash? That dash is you. You alone can control that dash. And what a privilege it is. You want God to forgive you. You want God to do his miracles in you. You got to let him. By how? You forgiving. Right? You got to forgive. You've got to love. You've got to accept. You've got to live with one another. That's it. That's how you move those mountains. That's how you have that powerful, powerful type of will to be able to pray and believe in something that has happened. You need to be released of all the bonds that hold you in place. And forgiveness comes to us from God. You have that power to forgive others. That's your definition for that dash. How you live in this life. And living begins with forgiving. Now that's the message that we have at the beginning of the year. So in a sense, I wanted to play catch up with my life. I wanted to catch up on all the things that I left behind since the last month. And I'm bringing it up to date. Bringing it up by saying, yes, having gone through experiences with death, with elderly people, with young people, having gone through Christmas, having gone through incredibly busy cycles, I now arrive at the new year, perhaps 10 days late, but I have this incredible message that was given to us by our Lord Jesus Christ. If you want God's blessings, go ahead and bless others. It's in your hands. It's you who are going to do that. You're the only one who can forgive someone else. Forgive them their trespasses so that God will forgive us our trespasses. In other words, live in this world in harmony, and God will live in harmony with us. Pretty simple there, right? Yeah, so simple that it's easier said than done, right? But that's the challenge of life, and that's the beauty of life. Don't beat yourself up about it. It's very difficult to live in many senses. priests, bishops, deacons, saints, whoever they may be. We all go through this. It's part of the human condition. But it's fun. And that dash needs to be filled with fun. At this new year, we bless homes. And I bring you that blessing right now. We bless water for your spiritual needs, because you cannot live without the Spirit. You cannot live without water. We bless bread for your physical needs. May you have abundance in your life. And we bless salt. May you have flavor in your life. May you have happiness and joy. May that dash be filled with these three elements, which are the elements of life. Happy New Year! 10 days late. Here's Susie to share with you a little message about what we're doing. I'll be back in a few minutes to tell you where I'm going to be, what I'm doing these days. So hang on.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that reminder, and thank you all of you for all of your love and your support, your prayers. What a Christmas celebration we have had. I mean, from the donkeys, yes, it was funny because last Monday night on January 7th, we had our weekly Bible study, and His Eminence Archbishop Hovnan Derderian, the primate of our diocese, was present. He officiated at the water blessing at our service. And, we do Vespers and Bible study and Vespers every Monday night. And it was just beautiful because we also remembered my mom's 40th day exactly to the date. And we also had the water blessing service. And he heard about these donkeys that we've been donating to the refugees out in Darfur. He was so impressed by that and asked that we write about it. There'll be a link on today's show notes. We wrote up a small little report like about what we did throughout the Christmas season, from the 2,000 toys that we collected for the children in domestic violence shelters, all of this. You know, we're hesitant on writing about these so people don't think, hey, look what I did. But on the other hand, he made a really good point. He said, please write about it as challenges to other people, as challenges throughout our churches, that we've come to a place in our lives where we need to be reaching out and sharing with others. Outreach programs, outreach ministries. So do check out today's show notes. I'll have a link on all of the projects that we did. And do check out all of our spaces on Facebook and Instagram, as well as Twitter. All things pop up now and then. Or we'd like to think a little bit more on the now than in the then, okay? Let me give you a couple dates, okay, for you to put down. I'm going to be at the St. James Armenian Church in Los Angeles, January 20th. No, 17. Do not show up on the 17th. That's a Friday, right? Thank you. See, I know there's a reason why we keep you around. Yeah, okay. January 20th. It's a Sunday. We'll be at St. James in Los Angeles. February 3rd, I will be at the St. Garabed Armenian Church in Rancho Mirage, California. March, let's see, the last two weekends, it's 24th and 31st, we'll be at the St. Upgar Church in Scottsdale, Arizona. And of course, a few other dates in between. that we'll be reporting because Lent is starting, so we have a very busy Lenten schedule. But let me tell you that during Lent, we're looking at once a week doing programs at the St. Leon Cathedral. And now, ready for this date? Mark it down. April 6th, 2019, we will have Reclaim. And you've heard it first. Mark it down. The Reclaim Conference in its third year, third manifestation, will come to you on April 6th. So that about wraps up everything that we have. I want to invite you to all of the usual spots. There's a lot of stuff that we want to do, and it becomes real with your prayers and with your support. So do support us. You can find a donate button, as Susie said, on our webpage at inissues.org. Thank you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. On behalf of our producer, Susie, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
This is the reason of the season.